Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Right now, we are going to listen to the silver-throated tones of an old man. An old man that has been there, done that, climbed that, swum that, and lived that. Here he is, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb. You never cease to amaze me with your intros.
Boy, I tell you what, sometimes we got to scratch the paint off the bottom of the barrel there a little bit.
I know. Well, it's been 5.5 years we've been doing this, you know.
You know, and so. It's been fun. I have more people come up to me on the street and say, why hasn't that man been arrested? No, that's not what they say. They say, that is the most enjoyable segment on the radio. They just really enjoy it.
Well, good. I enjoy it, and I think you do, too. It's kind of a fun... kind of a fun hobby.
You know, and so. Where would I be, honestly, where would I be had it not been for our friendship and our getting to know each other on this radio? I would never have enjoyed maple bars with bacon.
And that's coming up in a few months.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too, because that's the only time I get them, too.
You know, I laugh every time I think about that, because here's about 6 or 7 great big 6'5", 240-pound bulldoggers standing up there in the secretary's office, and I'm chomping down on a maple bar with bacon, and they looked at me like, ooh, and I go, this is good, try it, and then all of them ate the whole dadgum box of them.
You're going to have to start hiding them.
Yeah, I know. What are you going to talk about today?
Well, you know, last week I talked about the soldiers on the frontier
and
the cavalry and their saddles and their horses and one thing or another, and you were curious about the food situation.
Well, I am, because, you know, I've been on this diet, and this diet is ugly. It's like I might as well just eat a cardboard box for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And really, in the old days, they didn't have very decent food to take with them, and if they did take it with them, boy, I mean, it probably had mold on it and everything else. Tell us about how they ate.
Well, okay. Let's say you're a soldier, you're a cavalry guy or infantry, either one, but, you know, whenever possible, the soldiers in the field tried to find a good campsite near water, not only for themselves, but, of course, for their animals, the horses and the mules. Well, if the horses were not in good shape, you know, of course, they wouldn't be able to move. They had to have those horses watered and fed and grained and all that stuff. So, you know, they could carry some water in the wagons, but... of course, that capacity was limited, and so it was very, very important that they find rivers, streams, lakes, or ponds, or whatever. So now mules, of course, they can go a little longer without water, and but horses, they can't. You know, you've been around horses enough. They've got to have their water.
That's right.
And in fact, a few of the soldiers, their journals have mentioned that, you know, when the water isn't there, I mean, sometimes, obviously, the horses die. They just don't make it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
But likewise, before seeing to their own needs, the cavalrymen, they had to take care of the horses. And as soon as they stopped to make camp, the men would unsaddle, water, feed their animals, curry them down, brush them, whatever. Now, if the campsite was in a grassy area, of course, the animals could graze. But the horses also needed grain. And I mentioned that last time, that that's one reason that the cavalry horses stayed fairly healthy all year round, because they would grain them and carry grain with them, which was, like I say, transported along with the men's provisions, sometimes in the wagon, sometimes they'd carry it in their saddlebags. And, of course, the horses could be tethered out to a picket pin or tied to a tree and pretty well eat what was available. But while the animals were tended to, among the first tasks in setting up camp was making fires for cooking. Well, generally, there's a few men that were assigned to go out and gather firewood, or where there were no trees or anything, well, they got the old good old buffalo chips. And, of course, these dry droppings were, they also called them prairie coal or Dakota soft coal, or they had other nicknames that we probably shouldn't go into.
No, go ahead. I think you should tell everybody really historically what they were called, so go ahead.
That's all it says, is other nicknames. So we'll leave that to the imagination.
Okay.
So anyway, sometimes, you know, if the troops were close to hostiles, why, fires were not allowed, and because, you know, they didn't want to give away their position. So this meant that they had to eat cold rations and do without coffee, you know. And so, you know, the field rations basically consisted of dried salted meats, such as salt pork, bacon, dried beef, hardtack, coffee and sugar with dried fruit occasionally. Now, you asked last week about hardtack.
Yeah.
So I did a little research on that.
Yeah, now, I was wrong, wasn't I? I want to kind of bare my chest on this a little bit. I said it was like a hockey puck type biscuit. It's not really, is it?
Well, it's sort of. It really could be because basically, it was made with water and flour, and sometimes they added salt.
Oh.
And what they would do is they would bake them sometimes from 2 to 4 times to get them really, really hard. And, in fact, if they baked them 4 times, they were really hard. And those were the kind that oftentimes went on board ships that were going, you know, out for a year on the ocean.
Well, how did you bite into them? I mean, you had to shoot them first with a Colt 45 or what?
Well, I'm looking at some pictures of different types of hardtack. Some of them actually look like crackers. Some of them during the Civil War were actually stamped with a design of some kind to indicate where they were from.
Okay.
But it was really kind of a food staple because you could always have the hardtack and it would never go bad. I mean, the only bad thing was you'd get weevil in it.
Weevil.
And so what they would do is they would soak their hardtack in their coffee, and the weevil would die and float to the top, and you'd just kind of scrape off the weevil off the top of your coffee, and then you'd drink your coffee and eat your hardtack.
I can't imagine why we always do this just prior to having our luncheon specials on my program.
Well, yeah, this isn't as bad as some of the things we've talked about, but this hardtack, it was a staple. I mean, for years, like say, not only in the infantry and the military, the cavalry, but on the ocean-going vessels. So hardtack was a really, like I say, it was like a super cracker, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, the supply wagons, they carried these basics, and they carried flour, beans, peas, rice, vinegar, and other items. And then each man actually carried his own rations, which they would replenish from the wagons every few days. And one problem the commanders had to watch for was men eating all their rations on the first day of a march.
Oh.
And left them with nothing for the next few days.
I mean,
they had to ration out what they got. So, but before 1872, field cooking was typically done as a company using big old cast iron pots, you know, the Dutch ovens, I suppose. But after that, personal cooking gear was issued, and each man prepared his own meal. So the soldier's two-piece mess kit consisted of a frying pan and a shallow tin plate fitted on the top of that, and other utensils. Usually they had a tin cup, a knife, a fork, a spoon. Salt, pork, and bacon were usually boiled first and then fried. And like I say, the hardtack was usually put in water or coffee to soften it, and then they would actually fry it in a pan with the pork grease.
Well, now, I got a question there. You said the bacon was broiled or boiled first?
Boiled first.
Why? Why?
You know, I wondered that myself. I don't know why they boiled it first, unless it was just so tough that they... another thing is, sanitation-wise, it probably helped... kill some of the bugs that were in the bacon or the salt pork.
Well, you know, your bacon. Okay, now, we're so cautious today that everything has to be just right. But
right.
Now, they're out there in 100-degree weather, riding all day from like 7 in the morning until like 5 at night. And then they pull off that saddle and they get into their saddlebags. And they open up maybe some salt pork or some bacon, and after being on the trail for a week or 2 weeks, this stuff has got to have a whole bunch of other things hanging on to it. I mean, this has got to be ugly.
Yes, and that's another good reason why they probably boiled the heck out of it and then fried the heck out of it. But and the hardtack, you know, like I say, it was hard because they baked it from 2 to 4 times, but it would get damp when they were riding, and quite often it would grow mold, or it would get the weevil in it.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, then they'd put it in their coffee or their water, and the weevil would just float to the top. They'd scoop them off and had dinner.
You know, one of the things I've noticed, though, in all the Western books that you want to read, and I've got literally thousands of Western books here in my office and in my bedroom that I just read religiously, the number one drink in the Old West was always coffee. They would beg, borrow, and steal to have a cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was a pick-me-up, and it was a hot drink when you were cold. That was one of the very, very staples of all the Western, you know, the miners, the pioneers, the all those guys.
Now, I did notice in one book I was reading about Texas after the fall of the Alamo and before Texas independence, a lot of times they substituted coffee with corn, kernels of corn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But actually, I've got this next segment. I'm going to talk about coffee a little bit.
Okay.
And the Army nearly always provided coffee as part of the men's rations.
Okay.
And they drank it, usually actually sweetened with some sugar, if they had it, obviously. But the hot, sweet beverage was one of the few pleasures the soldiers had. I mean, it warmed them up in cold or wet weather and kept them alert. I mean, the soldiers usually received their coffee ration in the form of raw, green, whole beans. Now, what they would do is they would roast these in frying pans, and then they pounded them between two rocks or with the rifle butt. The grounds were thrown into the pan with some water and boiled for a while, and then this brew was allowed to sit for about 10 minutes. Now, once the ground settled to the bottom, the coffee was poured off the top into a cup. Now, the experienced soldiers often roasted and ground their ration of coffee beans all at once. So they do a whole bunch at one time. And then they would mix their sugar ration in. And so this saved time later on and also assured that their brews would be evenly sweetened and they would not run out of one item before the other. So, in other words, they'd take their whole ration and do what they needed to with it and then just pull out so much each day.
Why wouldn't it have been a lot easier just to stop into a 7-Eleven?
Well, you know, it's a good question. But now another thing, you know, along the way, if conditions permitted, they were allowed to hunt deer or other game to supplement their rations in the field. And there's a story about one guy, he was out trying to get a bird, and he saw one, and he shot, and it jumped in the air, and everybody's mouths were watering because they could imagine this juicy supper. Well, the hunter went out to get it, and he returned without the bird, and he didn't say anything. And another man went out to investigate and found out he'd shot a good old buffalo chip instead of a bird.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
You know, the thing I'm impressed about is, though, that it must have been such a mundane diet, knowing that when you got up in the morning, what were you going to have in the morning as compared to noon or evening?
Yeah, I mean, you can't mix things up very much with what you got.
No.
And especially if you're out on the trail as a patrol, you know, all you got is what you're carrying.
Yeah.
But, you know, you mentioned about sanitation. Well, you know, minimal effort was spent on washing up after meals. I mean, you know, they were tired. plates and utensils were used. It just wiped off with leaves or sand or rinsed with leftover coffee. A lot of the food preparation in the field was unsupervised, and the food itself often was bad to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So needless to say, various forms of intestinal distress was common in the field.
Oh, please explain that for us.
Well, out here in the West, we call it the Rocky Mountain Quick Step.
Well, you know, the thing I was reading in a book about cattle drives coming out of Texas, a lot of cowboys would look for outfits to work for during the cattle drives that had the best and the safest cooks, and that would sway them on their opinion as to whether they wanted to work for that trail herd or not.
And actually, I've got a whole article on Roundup cooks, and
yeah.
I'll give that one of these days.
And then some of these cooks, whether they were trail drives or whether they were Army cooks, not exactly their personal hygiene wasn't the best.
That's exactly right. And we'll talk about that one of these days.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes the supply train couldn't keep up with the soldiers, and the men had to do with what they could with what they had until the wagons arrived. So, you know, troops campaigning in rough territory or on fast marches might simply travel without supply wagons.
Mm-hmm.
So if the trek lasted longer than anticipated, the men could run out of food, water. I mean, in these cases, the soldiers were often put on even more reduced rations and might have only two meals a day. And occasionally, expeditions had to slaughter their own horses and mules. In fact, one guy in the Indian campaigns, he said about the unpleasantness of eating a pack animal. He said, the horse meat generally has an ominous odor about it, but when you're hungry, he said, this is surpassed. You can get by it. Fried and without salt, it's a little stringy, leathery, and nauseating. And then he said, mule meat, however, is offensive in smell, taste, and it's considerably fatty. So, you know, if they were desperate, they'd eat a horse. And if they were really desperate, they'd eat a mule. So
I'm trying to figure out how I can salvage the rest of my noon-type advertisers.
And I'm not done yet. But more important than having food was, of course, having good water to drink.
Oh, yes.
You know, obtaining an adequate supply was frequently a problem on campaigns. And in the summer months, obviously, you know, they could go weeks without rain, and ponds and creeks would dry up. And quite often, as you read about, you know, the cavalry chasing Indians, the Indians would lead them into the desert or someplace. And the Indians knew where the water was, but they knew that the cavalry didn't. And they just lead them out and knew that they were just going to, you know, they'd just basically die out there in the desert.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But the water sources that did exist, a lot of times they were contaminated. And the Army, of course, didn't have any provisions for water purification. The troopers simply dipped their canteens into lakes, rivers, streams, ponds. And some Army surgeons did tell them to boil the water before they used it. But, you know, they didn't have time to, you know, if you're thirsty, you know, you're not going to take an hour to boil up a bunch of water. So they often ignored that advice. But the men would often drink from the same water hole that the horses, and this is after the animals had stirred up mud and sediment. And in the Southwest, these desert ponds were often stagnant and covered with scum, and a lot of them contained heavy metals and all kinds of harmful little bugs floating in them. But
I'm surprised that the whole doggone troop didn't have the screaming hurry-ups that they could run all the way back to the fort.
Well, maybe their treks didn't go as long as they wanted on the way back. I don't know. Frequent stops.
Is that why John Wayne rode tall in the saddle?
we'll move on here. You know, however, they did have their own purification system. Now, if the water looked too murky or disgusting, a soldier might strain it through his shirt, or he'd take off his sock.
Oh, come on.
Strain it through his sock.
Now you did it. You
yes,
just tipped
you,
over the apple cart right now. Strain the water through their socks?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure they probably wore the same socks for, you know, more than one day.
Hey, Bernie, you want some water? I'm going to strain it through my socks. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe that.
I wouldn't even strain through mine that I only wear once a day.
Oh.
But, and, you know, unfortunately, they got sick, and some even died from drinking the contaminated water that had the bacteria, the parasites, the viruses, toxic metals. I mean, Yeah, it was dangerous, not only, you know, with Indians and one thing another, but, you know, just the very existence of staying alive with water and food.
Would you promise me something that if you and I go on a trail ride across the desert, would you promise me that you're going to take adequate water supplies? Because I would hate to have something happen and you start taking off your socks and I'm running as fast as I can.
You know, actually, last week I was up in Boise for the state tournament. And they have this outdoor expo over at the fairgrounds every year.
Yeah.
And I went in there, and as I was walking around, they had these, they looked like kind of a water, like about a quart water jug thing that has, you can put water in it, and as you squeeze it out, it comes out pure and clean, and it'll do, I think, like 150 gallons. So I bought a couple of those.
Did you?
Yeah, and they were I think, $20 a piece. And so, you know, I think it's a good idea to have those on hand, you know, or if you're heading up in the mountains, you know, because, you know, we just can't, you can't drink water up in the mountains like we did when I was a kid.
And let me tell you something, I am a victim back in the 80s of having that Girardia, and there is nothing more disconcerting than having that.
Yeah.
It's bad stuff.
Well, I went on a whitewater trip as a Boy Scout when I was about 14.
Yeah.
And at that time, you could just drink water right out of the Middle Fork of the Salmon River.
Yeah.
And they told us, you know, no problem, just, you know, but that was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was still when they circled wagons at night, wasn't it?
Oh, that was a great trip, that Middle Fork. I don't know if you've ever been on.
I have.
Beautiful country.
Absolutely.
There, bighorn sheep and...
Yep.
I've got a little story sometime I'll tell you about some guys that were packing mules into the Middle Fork and had a little disaster in there. But
you know, I'm more concerned about it. If you go on a camping trip and you don't know the guy that you're going to be staying at his cabin or something, and you see him get out of bed early in the morning and start straining water through his socks for coffee, I would suggest you say you don't prefer any coffee in the morning.
I'll just go with water. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Not strained water. You could be like John, or not John, but 007, James Bond. You could say, just pure, not strained.
Yeah, not stirred, not shaken. Just give me the water on top.
Oh, Doc, you did a great job on research. One quick question, short answer, because I'm almost out of time. But basically, when they got back to the fort, did the diet improvement take place, or were they subjected to just low-class food all the time?
Okay, I actually have a little section on that, but we don't have time. It's not very long, but they did have better situations. They had a kitchen equipped with stove and utensils. And
well, can you talk about that next week?
Well, yeah, I could probably do that. I don't have a lot on that. There's a little bit, but I can go into that and the Roundup fare that they used that the cooks and the wagons on the trail drive.
Did they ever have such a thing as a good old peach pie?
You know, they did occasionally.
Oh, yeah. My.
I mean, you know, if they happened to get some type of fruit or vegetables, or not vegetables, fruit, or, you know, apples, pears, something, yeah, they could get something, but that didn't happen very often.
No. Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest Dr. History on our program this morning, and I can't wait for next Tuesday. He does a wonderful job. Doc, God bless you, man. Thanks for your friendship, and thanks for being on the air.
You bet. You have a good day, Zach.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
What a nice man, and I mean that. He is really a nice, nice man. Dr. History.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance, and you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.